Welcome to Be Simply. This is She, and I want to thank you for joining us today. We are connecting to the alchemy of food, our roots, and today we're going to celebrate and shine a light on two wonderful products that are being produced. One is My Coco Runes, and Sequoia is going to join us and tell the story of this product and how it came to be, and her amazing story about shifting her reality from being diabetic to utilizing food as her medicine. And then we're going to connect with Jonathan down in Costa Rica, and he's going to share a little bit about Guayosa tea and how they are creating preservation project with the tea that is produced out of Ecuador in the upper Amazon and what its benefits are. So without further ado, let's dive in. To Be Simply. This is She, and I want to give thanks for you joining us in this moment. We're connecting to our roots, a little bit of food alchemy, and today we have a beautiful guest. Sequoia is the founder of My Coco Runes, and this company, Wonderfully Raw Gourmet, has all this beautiful inspiration for us to look at. So without further ado, we're going to dive in with Sequoia.
Encore une fois.
Sequoia, I want to thank you for joining us today. I'm really excited to share your story. It was the treasure beneath the love of your product, so that makes it even more yummy. I would love for us just to dive in as to how you became inspired to create foods that people can enjoy. That inspiration came in regards to your own health.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to share my story, and I am very excited about our interview too. So my story started about 7 years ago. I was diagnosed with diabetes. To be perfectly honest, I thought I was living a very healthy lifestyle, and I couldn't imagine how my body did that. And so I started investigating all different ways to feed and support my body, different diets, different theories, so many different plans. And finally, I got information about raw foods. And I didn't even know what raw food was, but something resonated very deep inside of me that this might be an answer. So there was a culinary institute called Living Light, and it's in Mendocino, California. And Sherry Thorey is the founder, and she's like the mother of raw foods and has this most amazing school up there. So I go, and I start learning. And for me, it was more like a download. I was getting information on how to create food that was not only good for me, but tastes delicious, that was live, that would feed my body, that the enzymes were nutrients and minerals and vitamins were still there, but also delicious enough that I could stick with it. Because what I had found out on my journey was that most of the food that was good for me tasted like medicine. And for me, I have a really hard time sticking with something that's really good for me but doesn't taste that good. My husband's like Mikey, he can eat anything, but I had a problem with that. So I needed to find a way where I could feed myself, but it also tastes good and also had a little resemblance of food that I was familiar with. So I got to learn how to make raw pizzas and spaghetti and lasagna and desserts and salads and all sorts of stuff. And during that process, I was able to reverse the diabetes. I got off all medication. I lost like 50 pounds. I got my cute back because I was like 55, 56 years old, not feeling that great, and thinking that, wow, you know, maybe this is what old age is about. But then I discovered that, no, I got my cute back, and I got my energy back, and I got my everything back. And so it was a really wonderful, wonderful, life-changing experience. And then I started to teach raw foods, and people loved my food. And they kept saying, God, you got to get these macaroons in the market. And I go, no, you know, I'm 56 years old. I really don't want to start a company right now. I've got a great life and so and such. Well, that really didn't turn out that way because a company hired me to create raw foods for their online farmers market. And I needed a commercial kitchen. And there was none in Watsonville, California, so I put a little prayer into the universe. 10 minutes later on Craigslist was an announcement. Young kale chip manufacturer looking to share kitchen space in Watsonville. And I go, oh, my God, that's a sign from the universe. So we ran down there. We signed his lease, and I started to make this food. And he says, you know, you really got to get these macaroons in the market. I go, you know, I don't want to start a business right now. I really like my life. He said, just go to our local market, New Leaf Market. They have 7 of them. I said, okay. So I put my red chef coat on. My husband put my macaroons in my basket like he's sending me off to kindergarten. And I go, and they love my macaroons. So they said, how quickly can we get them? I said, could you please give me 30 days? I don't have a bag and I don't have a label. 30 days later, we were in our first 7 stores. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, we're in 2,000 stores and we're in 9 regions of Whole Foods. So everything has just grown very quickly, and the response to the cocoa rooms has been amazing, just amazing. So I developed a macaroon that was not only healthy, but also delicious. So people with blood sugar can have it, can eat them, great for the paleo diet, and it's just made from very, very simple food that you can pronounce and spell.
Which is a benefit.
Coconut, almond flour, maple syrup. We decided to use maple syrup because of its healing properties, that it's one of the only sweeteners that helps heal the pancreas and doesn't give a real big blood sugar rise. Mm. The rest of my story is that my son, who is a top chef in New York City, had 3 restaurants, was there for 10 years. He was following what I was starting to do with the macaroons. And I called him up and I said, Eric, you want to come home, become our partner, and help us create this company. So him, Eric, his wife, Carly, they're our partners. So the 4 of us have created Wonderfully Raw. Mm. And recently, Eric's developed our whole veggie line. We believe that the kale chip lovers of the world needed some more vegetables. So we created Brussels bites, Brussels sprouts in 2 flavors, and snip chips, which are parsnips in 3 flavors. And we just recently launched that. So not only do we get to create amazing food, but we're a family business, and we're just really enjoying the process.
Mm, beautiful. And they're all really yummy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
If you can share a little bit about, if we go back a little bit, how you thought you were living a healthy lifestyle and you had type 2 diabetes, what you uncovered as far as the disconnect. So some people, if they might be having some red flags, maybe not diagnosed with a condition yet, but maybe just some understanding of where they might be headed in the wrong direction.
One of the big things for me was learning how to manage and control my intake of carbs. The timing of it so it wouldn't overload my pancreas or my liver. And what I discovered in my journey that when people do not eat during the day, okay, or there's a 5-hour period between breakfast and lunch or lunch and dinner, what happens is our body dumps a load full of sugar into our bloodstream without us eating anything. Mm. And so that can create havoc on the pancreas and really upset the whole, your whole system. And so learning how to manage my carbs was a big deal. And then really cutting down on the sugar, cutting out the white flour, eating a lot of vegetables, a lot of salads, and basically retraining my taste buds, because they say that within 7 days, if you hate something but you eat it for 7 days, you'll soon develop a like for it. So that's what they say. So I was just so committed in trying to do everything possible to be healthy and to stay healthy. And so that was a really important thing for me. And to live and to be able to eat things that, like my macaroons and like other sweets, like I make an amazing chocolate pudding out of avocado. So you can put the cocoa runs down as a pie crust, do a layer of banana, a chocolate mousse out of avocado and some strawberries, and here you have a dessert that's so decadent, but also your body can handle it. So for me, it was about creating new things where I wasn't feeling like I was missing anything or lacking anything or poor me, I have to eat this way. It was like, oh, yay, now I can at least have something good, and it really worked for me. I'm not 100% raw. I do love cooked vegetables and soups when it's cold and things like that, but I would say between 70 and 80%. And very, 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 mostly, I would say, plant-based diet.
I was going to say, if you could share a little bit of how your relationship with the earth has shifted as you are primarily a plant-based diet, if you what you've noticed as far as how you experience it and how you feel.
Well, I feel very, very connected to the earth. I feel a lot of gratitude for what the earth brings us and the quality of food that when it's organic and nurtured and grown in the right way, you can feel the energy of the food as you're eating it. So I have a lot of respect for farmers and the people who grow our food and the intention that they into the food. I'm just really aware of it, and I can tell when a food is live or dead when I'm eating it. Yeah, I love the earth.
Beautiful.
Very grateful.
And I love how you stated to take baby steps. So if you could share with the listeners a couple simple steps if they know they need to take some, make some modifications with their eating, but they're haven't maybe been successful at shifting their food habits, if you can shed some light and encouragement on how they could take small steps to, on this.
The first thing I would do is stop beating up on yourself. Know that this is a process and that you're going to do the very best that you can. I would add a salad to every meal. Just adding the greens in the beginning is, you know, becoming almost 50% raw. So you're getting the enzymes, the nutrients, the minerals, you're feeding yourself. Another really, really helpful thing would be juicing, green juice in the morning. If you add a green juice and a salad to your diet, even that little baby step will make a huge difference. And the green juice in the morning could be kale with celery, a little lemon, some apples, and anything else, just to get those green leafy vegetables. And that would be really good because juicing is such dense nutrients and very, very good. Cut out sugar, you know, cut out white refined sugar, cut out white flour. Those four little things could make a huge difference in someone's life.
And
you know?
Definitely.
Yeah, and the fast food and the processed stuff, you know, try to look for food that's really food.
Yeah, aho. Can you share a little bit, you've mentioned enzymes a little bit, can you share a little knowledge on that as to why that's important for people to consider?
Well, enzymes mean it's the live part of the food, and the enzymes help digest the food in our body, so it's not just sitting there, what would be the word? Not petrifying, but you know what I mean. Not being digested, sitting in the colon, creating toxins in the body. At least the enzymes help to digest all of that. And when food, if you're eating food that isn't alive, your body is creating the enzymes, and you're using a lot of the enzymes that you create instead of adding the enzymes to your body with additional food. So it just, live food just helps support our process, gives us a little extra boost.
Definitely. Lettuce in the morning really does, I find.
It does. I like that too sometimes.
If you can share your, I don't want to say favorite, but one food that you're really, vegetable or fruit, that you're really partial to, and what it surprised you with when you learned more about it.
Well, one of the things that really surprised me, one of the recipes that I love was a raw lasagna using zucchini as the noodle, and then, you know, cutting it or on a mandolin very, very, very thin. And then what I really, really love is a ricotta cheese made out of almonds. Mm. So there's no cheese in it at all. So you get the zucchini as the noodle. You get the almond cheese as the cheese. And you put the, you can put a spinach, a layer of spinach and mushrooms and a nice marinara. And then you dehydrate it for a couple hours and you swear it was cooked.
Mm.
But you're dehydrating at 118 degrees, so again, all the enzymes are there.
Mm.
And that I found great. I love that, and I love that. I love the almond ricotta, and with a pesto and the little crackers. I mean, it's fun. It looks very good. I was just so excited to have interesting food to eat.
Definitely.
So that was something that I loved.
Mm. And if you can share a little bit, I'm always fascinated by nut cheeses, but it takes a little bit of practice. Can you give us any tips on how to keep our learner's curve to a minimum?
Oh, well, I don't think you can keep your learner's curve to a minimum, but the best tool is a Vitamix, especially with the almond cheese.
Mm.
And at least with the almond, with the Vitamix, you can get the food to a consistency that's very smooth.
Mm.
With other blenders and other equipment, they don't have the power to do that.
Mm.
And with raw food, a lot of it is about the equipment and the machines that you have to use. And one of the other things that I learned that was so interesting in creating, like, the perfect bite is that, you know, keeping your chop, keeping the vegetables very, very small, and just really have that intention of chopping everything the same, and then blending it. So with every bite, you're getting the sweet, the salty, the sour.
Mm.
You know, and having that intention of how you prepared it and the textures and things like that. But so many people today are teaching raw food classes, and you can take a basic class and learn so much, you know, of just how to do a few things.
What right now is been really predominant for you in the food culture, and as you're out in the world sharing your beautiful product and wisdom, that really has you inspired?
Oh, what has me inspired? Creating this company, working as hard as we're working, what inspires me the most is when I'm out in the world doing demos or at the Green Festival or sharing our food, is the reaction of the people who are eating it.
Mm.
And the hugs I get, and the thank you for creating such a good food, or the stories about how just having that has changed their life. Or I get letters from 10-year-olds who said, the cutest little kid, he sends me a picture. His name was Steven Yeager. I won't forget this. January 1st, he sends me a note, and he says, I just decided to cut sugar out of my diet, and my dad decided to do it with me, too. And my Nana brought me some cocoa roots, and they were so delicious. But my Nana lives really far away, and could you please send me some? I sent him a whole box of cocoa roots, yes. And he sent me the loveliest letter. and how he shared them with everybody. But it was just, I get this all the time. I get a lot of love and a lot of appreciation, and that makes the hard work worth it, knowing that people are waking up, people are changing, people want to eat good, and people want to live longer. And to have that little bit of a contribution to that, it's really, really inspiring and wonderful. I mean, my husband and I will come home sometime, and we'll look at each other, and we'll high-five each other, and we'll go, can you believe people love our product? We're still like going, oh, my God, you know, this is amazing. So
beautiful. And if you can share, that's such a touching story. With that, because being that in this epoch on planet Earth, we've gone from a lot of packaged food, you know, from the post-nuclear families to now, and the way to start to break that habit, but also the value of having some of these indulgences ready and available for us, and how that can assist us in maintaining a healthy lifestyle.
I think it's key. I think it's so important to have a few indulgences and little treats, because most people are emotional eaters too. And sometimes I could be an emotional eater, but and sometimes when you're an emotional eater, you want that treat. You want something that will satisfy you. So having things like this available just makes it a little easier to make the right choices most of the time.
Nice.
You know?
Yeah.
We can't be 100%, but if we have the intention, that's good.
Nice.
And you stick with it.
And if you can share a little bit, you were saying how you appreciate the farmers, and if you can share a little bit about how your knowledge base has increased about farming, organic food, and what you hope to continue to see within the food supply for everyone, really, on this planet.
What I hope to see is that all farming will be organic in the future. I would love to see that. I would love to see the earth be not depleted anymore. I would like to see us giving back to the earth and amending the earth with the nutrients that the earth needs to provide us with the food. I mean, we've really hurt our earth. And so I would love to see that. And I love, you know, I was somewhere where a farmer was talking about how many years it takes them to get the earth strong enough to support food growth. And the love and commitment that they give that every single day just to be able to plant and to provide us with wonderful things to eat that nourish us. Their heart and soul, I'm talking for a few of the organic farmers I know personally, their heart and soul is in what they do. As much as I love what I do, they do the same. And I think that kind of passion and commitment comes through the food, and it's really important, I think.
And how do you feel if you get to vision this out, where we have, maybe in the future it'll just be labeled the food that's not clean versus having to identify the organic food, but if you could share how you think we could best right now support our farmers or get in touch with what their needs might be, since that's such a key component to our existence here on planet Earth?
Oh, that's a big question.
Well, baby steps, since you know a couple farmers, what do you think they need? How can we support them?
What do they need? They need people to buy organic to make the demand even more. Probably go out and protest about Monsanto and their seeds. And just to be aware and conscious, you know, of what they're purchasing, and to really support even farmers markets, their local farmers, natural health food stores, people who are really trying to make a difference.
Nice. And if you can give us a quick overview of your different product lines, which you mentioned in the beginning. I love that you're using Brussels sprouts and parsnips. Oftentimes people don't know what to do with those things.
Exactly.
My kids like them raw, which is a little unusual, I guess, for most people. But if you could share a little bit about your combinations and what inspired you and your son to create those.
Okay, well, we first started with the Cocoa Rooms, and we have six flavors. And the Cocoa Rooms are a raw vegan macaroon made from coconut, almond flour, maple syrup, vanilla, little salt, and a few other items just to, depending on the flavors. So we have our vanilla maple, we have our brownie, we have cacao nib, lemon pie, almond strawberry PB&J, which is really raw almond butter with organic fresh strawberries, and then we have apple pie. So those are our Cocoa Rooms. Those are the dessert snack item, and we also now have them in a mini size, like a little grab-and-go bag to take on the run, and that's kind of cool, too. And our top three flavors, vanilla, chocolate, and lemon. And then, as I said, recently we developed the vegetable line called Brussels Bites and Snip Chips. And the Brussels Bites are a combination of Brussels sprouts, and kale, a little carrot, and then some amazing sauces. And so the Brussels come in tamarind apple, and the apples are also organic dehydrated that we do ourselves, and also a chili pumpkin seed crunch. And then the parsnips are just finely sliced parsnips in three flavors, and there's a little coconut in that one. And we have dill pickle, cheesy herb truffle, and chipotle lime cilantro. And the parsnips are really good also to dip in hummus or guacamole. And so what's so wonderful about the vegetables is that you're getting the raw nutrients from the vegetable. Mm. You're actually getting the Brussels sprouts. You're not getting a cracker that has Brussels sprouts in it or a chip. You're actually eating the vegetable. That's what's so wonderful about that. And nobody in the country is doing anything with Brussels or parsnips. So I'm excited about that.
How are you farming those? Because typically we see them around November in the North American continent.
Exactly. In our area, we're so lucky. We're in like the agricultural mecca of California. Hmm. So we have a wonderful organic produce company called Lakeside in our area, and we've contracted them. Mm. So they grow those for us.
Nice.
And so it's local, they're right where we are, and it's wonderful.
Mm. I wish we could have them more often.
I know.
Oh. Mm. Can you just share, as we're going to close out, a little bit about what you have available with your recipes online and where people can find you? And what you guys have up and coming.
Okay. Well, our website for our company is called mycocorooms.com. And so that's mycocoroon as in Nancy S.com. And there you can get everything that I spoke about. And we're also in all of the Whole Foods and the raw food section, Sprouts, Fresh and Easy soon, 22 Costco stores in California, mm-hmm. and we're just everywhere. Recipes online, my wonderfully raw gourmet.com site, that's the site that I used to do my teaching from. Mm-hmm. There are some recipes there. And then people can email me, too, if they have any questions or concerns.
Well, I'm just so excited. As you were talking about the veggie chips, I'm like, wow, this is what, you know, a Dorito should have always been, just a Brussels sprout.
Exactly.
Or a parsnip.
Right.
Because the flavors
exactly.
are like that, you know. So.
Exactly. And people, when they eat these, they go, wow, you can taste the vegetable. I said, yeah, isn't that cool? So Yeah, what a concept.
Exactly.
But we're just very excited to do that. Yeah, we'll see where it all takes us, but I know we have some exciting new products in the works in our development, and we just want to be able to create the best, healthiest food that people can enjoy and eat. Mm-hmm. And that's our mission.
Nice.
With love, lots of love.
With love, that's very important. We don't want any angry chefs.
No, not at all.
So, well, Sequoia, I'm so just honored to have met you this way and had the opportunity to share your story. So I really appreciate you being here today.
Oh, well, thank you. I really enjoyed sharing my story with you today, too.
Once again, I want to thank Sequoia for joining us today. Please, if inspired, go out and support their products by sampling them, trying them, and seeing where it takes you.
And now we're going to dive into our conversation with Jonathan and exploring the Guayosa tea.
Welcome to Be Simply. This is She, and I want to give thanks to each and every one of you that are connecting in this moment. We are connecting to the alchemy of food and our roots, and today we're going to connect to Guayosa, Amazonian energy tea, and we have special guest Jonathan Miller Weisberger. He is the author of Rainforest Medicine, Preserving Indigenous Science and Biodiversity in the Upper Amazon. He is also one of the founders of this beautiful retreat center called Guaria de Oso, and it is located in the Oso Peninsula in Costa Rica. It is a experience that can't be really put into words, so if you have the opportunity, please go. In addition to him sharing his wisdom today, we would like to shine a light on this project, and we will do so further as we conclude our conversation. Without further ado, let's dive in. Jonathan, it's exciting to talk to you today about tea, special tea that you introduced me to when I brought a group down there to your property in the peninsula, and it really impacted me, both your land and the tea, and I was so excited to find out that you were distributing it, because that memory just held, and even though I had tried other products from other people, it wasn't the same, so... I was very excited. So I thought we could start off by, if you could share a little bit about the Guayosa tea and your passion for it, and we'll just start there.
Yeah, well, ever since I was just a young kid, because I was raised in Ecuador, I was would drink Guayosa. Not so much in the mountains, because back in the days when I was a kid, I was raised in Quito, in the mountains, but it wasn't that well known. It was mainly a drink that was drunk amongst indigenous families in the Amazon, mainly amongst Quechua and Shuar families at the base of the Andes in Ecuador. But in the mountains, there was always Guayosa, and was mainly drunk by priests, because it was popular amongst the Catholic priests. So oftentimes families of like people who had like relatives that were monks or nuns in the Catholic Church knew about Guayosa. But then also, it was also found in the bars, because they'd mix it with alcohol and make it like an alcoholic drink out of it. So, but now it's getting to be much more popular. Still not so much the mountains, but all throughout the Amazon region and in restaurants all over the place, they'll serve it to you for lunch. Something, you know, just five or more years ago you'd never see. It was only drunk in families. But it's been drunk amongst families for years. I knew about it when I was a kid, because I visited the rainforest on several occasions. My parents took us down on vacations. We went to different lodges, you know, the small cabin in lodges that offered, you know, experiences into the jungle, and they always had the place to serve. But I remember when I was a kid, the times it served, she's always like really watered down, and it didn't seem good or anything either, because oftentimes they wouldn't boil it enough. But now, like, some time has passed and the Guayosa culture has taken form, and it's like growing into a bigger thing now. And like I say, you can find it in almost all the restaurants in the towns of, let's say, Tana or Puyo most of these small jungle towns at the base of the Andes, and it's quite nice, and they give you pictures of it. And but when the leaves are dried and simmered for 15 or odd minutes, it's unlike a lot of teas. Most teas can be just like steeped, like, you know, make an infusion, and it's just quite fine. Like most herbal teas, chamomile, mint, for example, just a hot water infusion, even yerba mate, which is a close relative of guayusa. But guayusa, on the other hand, really to get the full body of flavors, has to be simmered for about 15 to 20 minutes. And the dried leaves, when they're simmered for like, you know, about 15 to 20 odd minutes, then it gains a nice golden hue, golden brown hue, and it has a very pungent smell. It's quite amazing. And then it has the full flavors as well.
It was really beautiful because you served it under the little hut, and you boiled it in an iron pot or something like that over an open fire. Can you share a little bit about, and we would talk about our dreams, but the connection of the integration with the guayusa and coming in from the dreaming?
Well, a lot of times, for example, the guayusa is used in the morning by the, you know, in traditional families to awaken at 3 in the morning. In the most traditional setting, for example, amongst, like, you know, Shuar or Kichwa communities, especially in Pastaza province, the elder will start beating the drum at 3 in the morning, walking in a circle around the fire in the lodge, and everyone will start waking up, coming to drink guayusa, and then people will have dreams, they'll share their dreams, and then people will talk, and like the elders in particular who have more experience will interpret the dream, or sometimes we'll use that occasion to talk about the culture, or, you know, legends. There's lots of oral tradition, many occurrences of the past, teachings that usually talk through legends or also examples of situations that have occurred to people will be discussed. Or sometimes just that there's a problem going on, they'll analyze the situation and try to, you know, look into, oftentimes dreams are, you know, indicators towards the solution of problems. So people analyze dreams with that in context, or related to anything that's going on, or advise, you know. It occupies every morning in the traditional culture. They'll wake up every day at 3 in the morning to have these, you know, this time to be able to transmit, like I say, you know, cultural lore, or also to interpret dreams, you know, as a sign or a way of looking for signs to navigate in everyday life.
Can you share a little bit? What I've noticed is that I will smell it all of a sudden, even if it's not around, because I drink it every morning. Can you share a little bit about its magic to continue communicating with you, if you've noticed this?
It's magic?
Well,
communicating?
It's ability to communicate. I will often sense it when it wants to maybe have my attention, even though if I'm not drinking it at the moment, I might be, like today, driving back from my class, I could smell it, even though
really?
It wasn't with me.
That doesn't surprise me one bit. You know, like, as it grows and it goes out, there's more and more stories that are going to come around, and, you know, this is something that's a phenomenon that's occurring now. And, but yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that guayusa is a sacred plant, and it's, for many reasons, it's a, you know, it helps people to be more strong, more alert, more vibrant, more healthy, more closer to a life in communion with celestial beings, with the celestial energies, to, you know, help create a heaven on earth environment wherever we go, and all that that means, and that can be explored at length, and is a beautiful thing. But oftentimes, these plants are too spokespersons for their environment. So these plants now, since the, you know, upper Amazon is under threat now, from what seems like something that's never going to be stopped, and how that's going to be, you know, changed or not is very, it's capricious. It's getting to the point where almost we need an apocalypse to, like, you know, stop this wanton destruction that's just unleashed. You know, also the more people that wake up, also we can, you know, we have to, you know, keep optimistic, and the more, and, you know, anything is possible. Miracles can happen, and, you know, maybe enough people like the 101 Monkey Theory will wake up, and there will be wanton transformations and shifts in consciousness, and maybe we'll be the lucky ones to witness that. But, you know, these plants are definitely playing a role as spokespersons of their environment. They're not just getting out the world over, and this is, I think, a really important message that these plants are not just getting out because people all over the world deserve these energy elixirs, deserve these health-benefiting tonics. They're giving out because, yes, everyone has a spark of divine nature within ourselves, but because that has to be awakened so we can awaken as well the vision of unicity, and then as well we can awaken the cultural service. Once we're strong, once we receive the energy transmission from the plants, then we can, it doesn't stop there. It just begins there. Then we awaken the culture of service to help in any way that we can to keep heaven on earth and continue seeing that this earth is a heaven as it really is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. I hope. And can you share a little bit about your Guayosa Tea House, your vision for it, and your inspiration, and who it is supporting, and what?
Of course, thank you. Yes, the Guayosa Tea House is a initiative that kind of is born out of, you know, trying to bridge this gap. We have indigenous culture in the Amazon and the forest that's slanted, that's falling out too for many reasons. The need for an economy, and down there, it's very difficult for people to make any kind of money without detrimenting the ecology in some way or another. It's either cash crops, or go logging, or working for the oil companies, or cattle ranching. Yeah, there's some small town economies that are starting to, like tourism and this ecotourism. But for the most part, it's really difficult for people to make any kind of money, without detrimenting the environment. This is like basically the drop in the bucket, sort of like a holographic intention, and that hopefully if it takes root and succeeds, it'll just grow little by little and grow, keep growing. Its objective is to create an alternative economy for forest-dwelling peoples. And it starts with basically on a small family level. I'm a godfather to this child who's now a young man in the village outside of Archidona, this Quechua village, and they have lots of Guayusa there. And so we're starting with two families that we buy the tea from. And then the objective is once we can create a large enough market, we want to purchase just from 8 communities bordering this Napo-Galetas National Park. It's a wilderness area that back in the day between 1990 and 1995, I worked as part of Chapter 8 of the book. Rainforest Medicine talks about the creation of the Napo-Galetas National Park. So we're hoping to create alternative economies for some of these forest-dwelling people bordering the park, because the Guayusa tea can be dried and backpacked out, or much easier. And a lot of these communities, way out in the sticks, they're actually still engaged in cash crops like the growing of Naranjilla or wood, which is totally ruining their community trails and detrimental the ecology. So essentially, this is a restoration and rainforest. It's a market-driven restoration and rainforest conservation initiative in the optimum hopes. And we can't say that we've gotten there yet, because it's just starting with two families. Yes, the two families we work with, they're also our old friends, are convinced. They have small family farms. They live closer to town. And some of them have become professionals and have different jobs. So because of living closer to town, they've been able to make an alternative lifestyle for themselves. But the indigenous people who live deep in the woods are the ones that struggle and are more poor, have much more. But so we're working with these two communities, which have, upright economic needs too. Not that like they're made or anything, but some of the children have gone off to study because they've had that opportunity. But still, so we're buying seeds and hope from them to supply this initial, growing of the market. But eventually, once we, get big enough, the objective is to buy from these, indigenous communities that live farther out in the woods. But So the angle that we're taking is to pay above market average prices. Mm. We already pay 3 times as much as any other of the Guayusa buyers in the area pay, and some of them are international companies that export the tea to the United States and abroad. We pay 3 times as much as anyone else pays. And so once you're paying above market average value, then you have leverage. And what are we trying to leverage is restoration of degraded ecology and conservation. And of course, the growing of this completely organic. And so that's basically, in a nutshell, the initiative. And now it's slowly growing like the tree. It grows slow. I have clients now, and our mail order is growing, and we have, our tea in 7 shops in Washington State at the moment.
Mm. As I mentioned, yours taste different. So one, it's organic. Two, sending it in its leaf state, dry leaf state versus chopping it. If you could share a little bit, because there's many vegetables and herbs that do not like to be chopped by knives. If you can share a little bit about your choice of keeping it whole and how that assists with its energy.
Yeah, well, there's two basic forms. One, well, the first form is the people, and there's two would make wreaths, and they'd string a wreath in their kitchen and have it dry, and then you boil like, you know, a handful at a time, and so it's the holy form. But oftentimes, too, when the tissues are kind of broken up, then there's more surface area, more of the actual constituents can be released. And of course, but, you know, there's always a drawback because when plants are ground, then some of the essential oils that are more volatile, the top notes, what are called, evaporate. So with guayusa, it's a different thing. There are essential oils, of course. It has a super wide range of constituents, including extremely high amount of antioxidants. It's one of the highest containing, in fact, recent studies have demonstrated it to contain amongst the highest antioxidants of any known food supplement, second to raw cacao powder. And so it's more and more people are aware now of the value of antioxidants in terms of health benefits. Other constituents, like for example, the caffeine is quite stable. It can be ground. So, yes, I mean, no one will deny that. That's all we have in both forms. We have the wheat form, which is a bit more expensive because of shipping costs, and it's more bulky. But we also are providing in a ground form. But we still, even though it's ground, we recommend people to either make a sun tea, or they can put into the sun for not one day, but two or three days in full sun and strained. We also make a really nice guayucha, which is the kombucha mushroom with guayusa tea. It's an excellent combination. And then if it boils, just to simmer it for at least 20 minutes, and then you can put it into Italian or French press, like a French coffee press, and squeeze it out of this passed through a strainer. So there is a bit more extra work involved in actually brewing a proper batch. It's not like so easy to go like throw a tea bag into a pot, which some people like. But when people do eventually, you know, catch on to the flavor and the quality of a well-prepared batch of guayusa, nothing will stop them.
And can you share a little bit about the gifts or one of the gifts that it's given you over your lifetime? I don't know, you could pick one. I'm sure you've had many.
Well, one time we were out when we were on the eastern slopes. So anyway, one time when you were actually working, part of this adventure described in chapter 8 of the book on the east slopes of Galeras Mountain, and in year 2010, we lifted up this initiative and were successful in many regards to enlarge the national park to include this land area, vital for biological diversity and wildlife conservation, called the Wairatina Sacha, the rainforest of the purifying winds. And we were out there doing some botanical surveys and drinking guayusa tea, and that day we were trying to get the branch off this cacao tree to identify it as a form of wild cacao. And we were throwing up a piece of twine with a little hook at the end to pull down the branch. You can break off a branch that way to see what and make herbarium specimen. And we were all standing around, and it was taking us a while to get this branch down, when suddenly realized that, like, actually in the middle of the crowd was a deadly poisonous bushmaster, this poisonous snake. And it was, but he was like asleep. And we were looking, we all backed up, looked at it, and then, you know, just casually walked away and, you know, left it alone. And, but he was like totally asleep. In fact, I couldn't even believe it. I was like, I had to see for myself. So I poked it with a little stick, and lo and behold, it just stayed there, just kind of wigged, you know, twiggled a little bit, or, you know, moved a little bit, but just kind of stayed slumped. And the locals said that it's because we're drinking lots of guayusa. When you drink guayusa tea, the negative energies can't affect you. So it protects one.
Oh, that's so beautiful. More incentive to drink it. Especially for those living on the North American continent.
Yeah, there you don't have poison snakes, but it enhances the immune system.
Yeah, we don't have poison snakes, but we have
protects,
different kinds of snakes.
It protects the body. Yeah. Other kinds of snakes, it protects you from.
Yes, that's what I was getting at. Oh. And then if you can share a little bit about the effects on our biology, our human biology, and what it can assist with?
Yeah, well, I'm not like a physician or whatever. I've read some, hasn't been that many studies as well either. I can say, you know, what I have felt on myself and what I've seen. But for the most part, like, especially comparing traditional Amazonian medicine with traditional Chinese medicine, which is especially the holistic traditional Chinese medicine, there's a lot of similarity between traditional Amazonian medicine. It's quite interesting. And the traditional Chinese medicine has kind of evolved to the point where it's become part of mainstream, and it's with a curriculum that teaches at universities now. You even, you know, some people in some places can get, with your health insurance, they can receive acupuncture, so forth and so on. But so according to the five element theory, the color black relates to the kidneys and to the water element, the kidneys and the urinary tract and the urinary bladder. So guayusa, and one of the qualities of the ilex trees, for example, when it's bruised a little bit, crumpled and let to dry, the spots where it's crumpled first will turn black. And then the leaf usually dries very dark. And the tea itself, it's like just a, you know, modest amount is boiled, which is the best way to drink it. It's like a golden brown. It's good. When it gets black, it's a little too strong. And it's more medicinal than like an aromatic tea, you know. Like, it's recommended for daily use to drink it brown or golden brown. But for medicinal purposes, it can be boiled extra strong and drunk black as well for the kidneys. And so it's very good. It helps to cleanse the kidneys and cleanse, women, into all the lower organs, essentially, since the kidneys, the urinary bladder, and the urinary tract are down in the lower area of the body. It helps then as well as to sexual imbalances or dysfunctions in men and women, in ovaries or in distant. It can help to regulate, not all, but a lot over time, especially if it's drunk daily. And then it also helps to cleanse the kidneys and the urinary tract. If someone with a urinary tract infection, if they drank it daily, it definitely would help. And but it's also, and I think for more than actually healing herb, it's more like a medicine, more than actually a medicine, it's preventative medicine. Because if it's drunk daily, it helps to, because of the high level of antioxidants, it helps to, you know, prevent the body from having free radicals stick to it. If it's drunk daily, every day, it goes helping, especially hot, really hot, it helps the pores to sweat. And it's very alkaline, so it absorbs acidity and helps cleanse acidity from the body. All these are basically precursors to maintaining health and helps keep the immune system strong as well. Oftentimes, like, someone who drinks guayusa and they go out in the cold, you know, rain or get winded, they won't get a cold. If someone who wasn't, you know, because it helps to enhance the, it's very warm, it's good for, but also, I'm sorry, it's a lot of people call it the dream, like a dream tea. And it's funny, it does, also it's very good for people with a weak disposition or, because it helps, the kidneys are the source of energy, so as it cleanses the kidneys, it helps them to work better too. If the function of the kidneys, the energy rises, transforms, the kidneys transform, basically, you know, the energy from grains and whole foods into the form that's absorbable by the body. So if people have kidney stagnation, that's a major problem today. They don't get the most of the benefits from the food they're eating. So guayusa, by cleansing the kidneys, helps one to absorb, especially if one eats a holistic diet, to gain more energy from the food. Therefore, it's vitalizing. So that's why the next step is, once you're touched by the vital qualities of these plants, is to, and once one receives energy, is to begin to apply that to one's daily life, and then extend that beyond one's own needs, but to help other people too, to awaken the culture of service. That's why early in the morning, it's used to lift up the traditional culture, but all the indigenous cultures are based on a perspective of unicity, the true culture. So to selflessly serve someone else is to help oneself.
And I love that about you, that you always bring it back there to service.
Yep.
And now we have a tea that we can drink that can motivate us to be there. I think I already know the answer. This tea has motivated you to do a direct market initiative to restore and preserve the rainforest and what you've done there in the Oso Peninsula. If you want to share a little bit of your offerings that you have there, I would love to include that in this recording so people can be inspired to come see you in person.
Thanks so much. Well, right now I live in Costa Rica where we're talking, calling you at, and we have a lodge here, Guavia de Osa, the English name is Orchid of the Osa. And orchidoftheosa.com is the website. There we have a visitor center. We have different, once a year we have traditionalists from Ecuador come to visit the lodge, and we have basically even a shaman unification. So from the Sequoia village, they come because we work many years with the Sequoia. That's outlined in chapter 7 of the book, Best Field Summer of the Cicadas. I just got back from a really cool, we did a tour down to the Sequoia territory, and we're hoping to organize more of those every year. That's a really amazing adventure that is an economic alternative for some of the elders and families there, and to help bridge this, you know, cross-cultural gap between the indigenous cultures and the again, back to what I was saying, the indigenous culture is like a slanted culture because they need the money now, but then also Western culture is slanted too because, you know, we don't have all the answers. And, you know, the way that we're making money is also the environment. But the tea-drinking culture, these are the most conscientious cultures. So hopefully, like, the two spears crossed as the symbol. There's a metal spear that's slanted and the wooden spear that's slanted. But both spears together hold each other up. And the X is like a rune, a positive, the rune of a positive venture coming forth. This part of this initiative and all the work we do is to create intercultural exchange and offer people from the West, conscientious people from the West who are interested in learning more about indigenous culture, that opportunity. So we also do tours once a year down to the Sequoia. Just last year, well, actually this last month of March, we did an amazing adventure down to the wilderness, Blackwater Lagoons, wilderness region of Lagartecoch on the Ecuadorian-Peruvian border. That was just legalized to the Sequoia. It's part of their ancestral territory and very close to the very sacred lands of theirs that's talked about in the book, where the Creator lived on the earth. And so the elders love to go there. We did this epic adventure. And it's funny, since our lodge in Costa Rica is called the Orchid of the Osa, and it rained a lot, but the one of the beautiful days that we had out on these wilderness lakes, we came across this purple orchid in full bloom, and that was really cool. And I got to take some photos of that. Yeah. But the Sequoias come here once or twice a year, and they love the experience here. So that's an open invitation for those who feel the calling. We have these annual council gatherings here on the Osa Peninsula, and then we got one or two trips to Ecuador per year. That's all up on our website and the calendar events. And then the Guayusa tea can be purchased at the website guayusatea.com. We have a direct outlet, Jeremiah Reese is our U.S. business partner. He sells the tea in quarter pound bags in Reese, and they could be, you could, anyone can just order them online, and you know he'll have that sent to you quite quickly. And right now we're growing slowly but surely. We're actually in the need to expand more in order to get, you know, large enough quantities to ship. And so we're hopefully, but we're, you know, we're a very small company. So we're also looking for celestial investors who believe in what we do and would like to donate them to this cause.
Beautiful. I like that. Celestial investors.
Well, basically we need people who like have money and want to go, look, I'd like to see how this grows and give us a small grant. Because right now we have to build a whole series of dryers in these villages and a dryer in the mountains, because to get the tea out, I keep the price low, we need to ship it from the coast in Guayaquil, and for that we have to have a storage facility in the mountains because it's too humid in the rainforest, where we can go drying it from the villages in small amounts, sending it to the mountains, where we can get eventually a 5,000-pound container full and then ship that to the States. And that's going to help keep the cost down, because unfortunately, because of air cargo, it's been pretty expensive. So we're just breaking even. We're just right now supplying our customers, but we're not making any money. And so we're sort of between the rock and the wall. To this really to grow, we'll definitely need like a celestial donor of like $10,000 or $20,000, which is really not that much money. But and actually, donations can be made tax deductible through the Living Bridges Foundation as well.
Okay, and we'll put that on there. And I'd be happy to pay double per bag. So maybe you can have a name. Maybe you can have a name your price button too.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, it's all just, so thank you very much for that beautiful initiative.
Well, Jonathan, I'm excited to share the Guayusa Tea House, and now that we know more about it, that not even just beyond what the tea does, I can only attest that it's been very magical for me. But now we have a hand in preservation if we so do choose. So thank you for all that you do. It's really just so incredible.
Well, yeah, much pleasure. Thanks for having a good time.
Once again, I want to thank Jonathan for joining us today. Please, if inspired, connect to the links below. You can support his work by purchasing his book, supporting the tea, and or taking a visit down to the Oso Peninsula. It is a gift to yourself to completely unplug from the world and be nourished by the jungle. Until next time, this is she signing out with a deep bow, a soft gaze, a full heart, and a namaste. Be simply.